Welcome to podcast number 16. Today's guest is Nicholas Dixon. Back in the 90s, he was a house DJ in Leeds. He then travelled to the Far East and was resident DJ for the Thai Mafia. 3 years later, he met a German model who turned him onto art. He then returned to Leeds to his mum's couch for a while and discovered through Mikey Bray and another Leeds DJ that he could make a career as a visual artist. He lives in Leeds and has been described by Marie Claire USA magazine as the abstract artist making ripples in the UK. On today's podcast, we discuss growing up in Leeds, the clubs Back to Basics and Up Your Ronson, travelling and DJing in Burma, Japan and Australia, having a tiling business, discovering he could draw and paint, working with Mikey Brain and DJ Eats Everything, running the label Edible Records, following the Leeds team and painting the mural Bielsa the Redeemer. Hello, it's Vic Artistic, and I'm sitting here in the middle of Leeds, opposite the conservatory on the fourth floor, and I can say it is fourth floor with the definitely, because I've marched all the way up with a dodgy knee. Me and Nicholas Dixon here, who's an artist and entrepreneur and DJ, and he's basically, what's he like? He likes a full English on a Sunday morning in Farsley. I can't remember the last time I saw him. But anyway, it's his birthday today, so I'm going to just wish him happy birthday. Happy birthday, Nicholas.
Thank you, Mick, and a lovely introduction. Not so much the DJing anymore, it's just more of a hobby. But yeah, all the rest of it's correct, especially the full English.
I just came across you recently. And I'd never heard of you.
Yeah.
And I've just I've been sort of looking back on some notes. I've done a mini bit of research, not very much, but it seems like you've been a Leeds head for a long time, and you've ploughed similar sort of paths as me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's really fascinating that you can miss these mavericks in your life.
Absolutely.
They can be next door to you. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm kind of looking at your room here, and you just showed me your music setup here, a DJ console, booth, whatever.
Room, yeah.
And it's looks amazing. It's got covered in, there's an eye here, a little red eye, and there's a lot of strange kind of abstract shapes, and there is a kind of a, I can smell a little bit of Keith Haring.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know too much about graffiti and stuff. I mean, I look at stuff, and there's a little dinosaur down the canal. You go down the canal from Armley to Leeds, and I always pass this little dinosaur, and I fell in love with it. It was very badly drawn, and it had like buck teeth and glasses, yeah. And it was a dinosaur. And I took a picture of it, and I had it as my profile picture for a few years. But every time I come up, and now there's always been some developments, some visual developments.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it changes every week, doesn't it, down there? But it's funny you should say that, because sort of since we knew we were going to do this little podcast together, I'm exactly the same of you. We've just been sort of on a parallel sort of universe, and everybody I've spoke to, they're like, oh yeah, Mick Artistic, he's done my portrait at like Pin Bar and all down, you know, down at what's it called, what's the street called, do you know where the Adelphi is? Down there.
So you used to go in there
and do the drawing portraits of people on the bags and stuff. And it's,
no, this is it, yeah.
I've never bumped into you, but you've sort of bumped into everybody who I know.
Yeah.
So
no, well, I was looking, reading some of your stuff this morning, and I'm thinking, I don't understand how I've not met this man.
Mm. But it's probably for the better.
Well, maybe, yeah.
You know.
There's a couple of things like I saw, like house music, and I thought, oh, that sounds like it'll do for me, because I'm a big house fan. I don't go to clubs and stuff, but I have loads of CDs, and I listen to people like, you know, whatever. I just remember being in the Royal Park and going to some like mini festivals and stuff, and hearing some wonderful house music. You know, like what's his name now? Well, I'd listen to Daft Punk and I'd there'd be but I like them, you know, the yeah, melodic yeah, stuff, just, yeah, the gospel-y
yeah.
stuff,
and yeah, the, yeah, cool. And, well, like you said, you touched on a DJ now. He started off sort of as a DJ in late '80s, early '90s, when all the rave scene kicked off.
Yeah,
and you know, I was in the warehouse and down at Shelley's and over to, you know, all over the place, and got a pair of decks back in the day. I did studied music technology.
You were at Leeds College of Music, weren't you?
Leeds College of Music. Did the first music technology course of its type at that time. We weren't even in London at that moment, so it started off in Leeds, which was a bit funny at the time. Well, it wasn't really, because there was a big sort of, you know, the house scene was massive in Leeds. We're back to basics. And
oh yeah, Dave Beer.
And Dave Beer was a really good friend of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Tony Adam.
I know him, yeah.
you can't miss Dave, you know, there's no parallel.
Right.
Yeah. No, he's a great character, a good lad is Dave, and he's been through the wars, he's been there, seen it and done it, you
I'm
know.
Sure,
so
yeah.
And he's interestingly enough, he's with all this lockdown. Because he went to art college years ago.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he did all the, you know, the promoting, which he's done from Day Dot and the rest of it. But he's gone back to painting, because obviously the clubs are shut.
Yeah.
And his paintings are going and flying off the shelves. So, but I said to him, look, Dave, there's plenty of room in the art world for Dave Beard, you know, because of his, you know, just who he is, and his paintings are great as well. You know, there's quite a childish, not childish, but an innocence to him. Do you know his sort of portraits? And
well, see, there's portraits, isn't
yeah, it? Yeah, 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 yeah. So it's very interesting, and I think he's been getting a lot of attention down in London. But he's got all the, you know, everyone knows Dave. Do you know? So it's been great for him, but it's certainly pulled him through lockdown, with it, and it's given him a, you know, something a bit more. Oh, that's me.
It sounds like that sounds like we're just having tremors. The tectonic plates in Leeds are moving.
It's a rattlesnake in his boot.
All right.
But yeah, so he's sort of come out of this, because it's a very depressing time for anybody who's in that scene, you know, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. So for him to have the art is great for him. But sort of going back to my story, was a bit of a similar thing. So I did the music. Did the music technology.
What's music technology? Course.
It's the music production, but when it all started, you know, producing sort of house.
So it's just about learning to be a DJ, then, is it?
No.
To make
records.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, so like,
you know, with synthesizers, you know, the samplers, and you know, when all the sort of the house music scene kicked off.
Right.
So then we did the course, which was it was great to start with, but it wasn't, with it being the first of its type, it just had a lot of teething problems. So we didn't really hit the nail on the head. So went to finish the course and went to Thailand with a box of records, went over for 3 weeks, and as soon as we got there, we ended up sort of getting involved with the mafia.
So what, men in suits?
Yeah.
Or men in T-shirts?
Yeah.
and rings and necklaces. Hello!
But they run all the full moon parties down on Koh Phangan, and they had clubs in Koh Samui. Right. So we ended up sort of DJing for those guys. And then it was like, why don't you stay? We can put you up, we can pay you, we can feed you. So I ended up going to town for three weeks and came back 3 years later. So things were really happening over there, you know, sort of, because Thailand's it's sort of the centre, if you like, and all the DJs passing through, if they're going over to Hong Kong, Japan or Australia or whatever, they would always stop in Thailand. So it was a sort of a good...
So you were living, you were in Thailand for 3 years. All the shenanigans, whatever, the machinations of Leeds United, or maybe...
Oh,
whatever,
no, that was... Stuff like, no, this know. Was... I missed what was going on. I think it was the George Graham days, which I didn't really miss much, you know, yeah. So... And that was... It was sort of... It was 96 to 99 I was away.
Okay.
So, but the last year I was in... But in that time, we travelled to Burma, went to Japan... So, because I was sort of lining some gigs up over in Japan, but the girlfriend who I was with, a German girl, she didn't want to be with a DJ as such, so it made it quite difficult. So, anyway, I had a choice to make, and I chose the girl, and I went in and lived in Germany with her for a year, which was a crazy experience. She was like from this sort of background, a dad was like mayor of his town and on this big ship.
Where was this then?
Rheinfelden, which is on the border of Basel, you know, Basel at Switzerland,
right,
Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were just a year there. I was doing art, you know, we were doing markets. We went to Burma and bought a load of jewellery and did all that. And we got on it, you know, none of it sold. And it was, it was a bit of a fucking nightmare, to be honest. So the inevitable thing happened after a year. I ended up coming home with all of my life. And this was before you could fly, you could, you know, like EasyJet. So I had like 17 bags of all my possessions, all my life, what I built up over the last few years, and shuttled them from Basel to Zurich, London, Leeds. I don't know how I got it all on, but I did. But what I'm trying to get at is, I'd sort of given up my music career to be with this girl, but I knew that it wasn't going to last forever. And I mean, she was beautiful. She was like a model with Cosmopolitan in Japan and stuff. But And I thought, I'm not that shallow that I'm just throwing it all away just for a pretty face, you know?
Yeah.
No. So, but it was the thing is, it's while I was with her, she was an artist. And she encouraged me to pay. So this was in 1999. Mm. And it was the first time I'd ever got a sketchbook. So I used to do these crazy doodles. I've got it somewhere.
Yeah. You're starting out in black and white sort of stuff.
So this one, but it was more of a, it started off like that. Like that. It's like a tattoo sort of style. But it was more, this was sort of a stress and anxiety thing and sort of calming me down.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm going in my head thinking, because I knew this boat was sailing and like the music thing was running away from me. And it was sort of to calm me down, but that'd take me absolutely. I'd do it in sections, that'd probably take me a day. So it'd probably take a couple of weeks to do that. And then the next one, it's sort of...
eyes go to that. go to the defects.
It's a bit of a blip, but that's more controlled, so that's sort of getting rid of the thing. But that's... I had more, but I've sort of got...
For those of you watching in black and white, these drawings are in black and white. I'll show you some pictures at the end.
So the thing was, that was 99, so I came back to England... And I was on my mum went back to my mum's house, as you do, at that time. And I ended up on one of those 80s single sofa beds, you know, with a stiff thing. So I'm on the front room and I was there and it was like, I think that's sort of the lowest point in my life when I was, you know, because the music boat had sailed, you know, all the contacts had moved on. And then I just thought, what the fuck have I done now, do you know? So what am I going to do? I didn't have a clue. And the art thing, that wasn't even an option. It was, you know, there were no social media. And it was just, like I say, just a sort
it's a safety valve.
A stress relief at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So then in the next 10 years, I did different things. Ended up with my own tiling business, doing, like, travertine staircases, and which was successful. And then... They asked for
tiling,
yeah. But it was all sort of Yorkshire, like travertine and making my own windowsills, and it was quite artistic, if you like, but just bloody hard work, you know, too much hard work. And So, but again, there was this thing that I'd missed the boat with the music. And then I bumped into a friend of mine, Mikey, and he talked about parallel things. And all this, all my friends who sort of I know now were just basically, if they think, running down the same street, but on the opposite side. And for a number of years. And then I bumped into, we got introduced to a friend of mine, Frenchie, who was a DJ for Back to Basics and all. So it was all, I was introduced into that circle. But I'd known Dave years before, and we were sort of in different groups. I was hanging around with a lot of wrong ones when I was sort of a young kid and what have you. And, you know, it's, we all do things when we're kids. Growing up and what have you, so but
so were you brought up in Leeds then?
I was born in Wicker, moved to Horsforth, grew up in Pudsey and mainly Bramley, and then I lived in Seacroft, Middleton, Moortown, everywhere, been everywhere. So there's not many corners that I've not been squatting or, you know, been seen in. So, but then Mikey, who was an artist in his own right, quite an established artist from Birmingham, but he was living in Leeds. So I showed him the sketches, just said I did there, and he was like, bloody hell, mate, wouldn't you show me these before? He went, you know, they're amazing. So the very next day we collaborated, did a first canvas that I'd never painted on canvas before.
Right.
And so within sort of 6 weeks...
So what were you using? What kind of brush did you use?
It was... it's just normal sort of flat brushes for like acrylics and
so have you used brushes before, or was it always
you've always
been a pen before?
Well, like pens, you know, like the sort of architect pens.
Like those, like them drawings you showed me, the pen and ink drawings, those are just straight off the back. There's no like a lining up and preparation.
It's all just off the ink, like what you.
Yeah, the same. I'm addicted to ink.
Like the
this is it. It's basically straight into the main line.
Yeah,
there's no preparation. No. I just have to hit.
Well, these are all the same. That's the same.
Yeah.
You know, apart from sort of the geometric shapes will be set out beforehand, but everything else, it just flows from my mind, you know, it's all, I don't even know what I'm going to paint sometimes, so. But, so getting back to the Mikey, so we did 15 paintings in 6 weeks, and, you know, Stinky's Pink House, don't you?
I do, yeah, I've never been in it.
Right,
I've always passed it, I want Stinky's Pink House.
It'd have been your kind of place, Mick, I tell you, but, there was a night on a Circa Loco night, which was an Ibiza night, and friends of ours were promoters who were doing it, and everyone was sort of, wow, where's this painting come from? You know, they were as shocked as
I was.
So we did like a pre-party art sort of, you know, exhibition beforehand. So with these 15 paintings, bear in mind I'd only been painting 6 weeks, we sold 6 of them, but we had the tuxedos on and the cravats. And it was my birthday, actually. How mental is that? 2010. So it's exactly 10 years today that we did fucking hell. I've only just thought of that.
And you were painting.
The exhibition was tonight, 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I always remember sitting with Mikey, my mate. Everybody had gone and we were upstairs. And the penny dropped and it was like, that's why... I did all that. That's why I went on that journey with Claudia, she was called, you know, the girl. And I went through that, and all the 10 years that I was like, what am I doing? What have I done with myself? I was basically doing this in my mind, painting these shapes, because once I started, it was like I'd never not done it, you know. So
it's just a case of turning on another tap.
That's sweet.
There's another tap comes out, and you're leading one sort of life. You're doing whatever it is. I mean, I was doing drawings and stuff, pen and ink drawings for years, and gradually I got a bit tired, and then the next thing I ended up being divorced, or separate from my wife. And I had to sort of reevaluate. I ended up in a club one night, a pub called The Grove, and there was a band on stage, and they were fairly pants, and so I started to heckle them. And the next thing, I got invited to go up on stage, and I got up and I just started to talk about smoking and pinball, wow. the joys of smoking and pinball, yeah. and I thought I was having a breakdown. I'm thinking, what am I doing? What is this? It's not funny. What is
all
this?
These people
this?
Looking
so,
at
and me. And it was dead quiet, and I'm just rambling on about, you know, just lighting up there.
So it's like the early spoken word.
Whatever, I had no idea what it was, because I thought, I can't play guitar. But the next thing I found, I stopped, and then everybody cheered, and then somebody came up and said, where are you playing next? So that was like my...
Yeah, yeah.
So the thing is, you suddenly find yourself
fully like a free. Rebirth, isn't it?
Yeah, know? It is, yeah. It's like you shed a skin.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So you've been sort of before doing, you know, like your joins and what have you, but what you must have been, did you have any sort of background with art or the music, sort of from...
Yeah, no, I went to Bradford Art College for 4 years.
Nice, yeah. Were that from school?
I went out, I did loads of... I worked for insurance companies and stuff. I worked for an oil company. I was working in... I worked for a printer's, first of all, because I thought, that's kind of got a foot in art.
I nearly went down.
Flexographic printing, that's what it was. And I was making... we're doing sort of... wrapping paper for flowers for florists, and I had 6 months of that, and I was just carrying printing rollers, and I was coming home covered in ink, and I was basically just a dog's body for six months. So I'm not learning, this is awful. So I left, and then I got a job in an office. I thought, I'll be in an office because that's tidy and I can wear a suit and look civilized. And I worked for an insurance company, and I did 3 or 4, and I kept getting sacked. Because I was drawing on the invoices and stuff, and just went out of my mind, I thought. And then I ended up, my mates kept bullying me, saying, go to art college. And I go, well, I'm no good. Why would I go to art college? Yeah. I'm just, you know. I said, no, that's all you do, you just draw. So I went to art college. Yeah. And
What did you study?
I studied film, theatre and TV.
Right.
And I had no idea what... I wouldn't know, and I'm the least technical person in the world, but I didn't have the bollocks, I didn't have the courage to, I didn't think I was any good, so I went on a theatre course, I thought I'd be an actor.
Yeah.
I went on this, but the thing is, I spent my time at home just doing these pen and ink drawings.
Yeah.
I thought, at the end of, we had the big show at the end, I thought, I'm going to get kicked off the course when they see what I've got. I haven't done any videos, I haven't done anything, no puppetry, no mime or anything. Yeah. I just got these pen and ink drawings. Yeah. So I turned up with these drawings and... I had no frames or anything, just stuck them on the wall, and somebody said, can I have that drawing? I'll give you my coat, I'll give you 40 quid for that. And I went, this is back in 1976.
Yeah.
I went, hey, you know, I thought they were just taking the piss.
Yeah.
And the next thing I sold half, you know, people saying, I'll have that. And the tutor said, I'm going to get you a show. Your work is like, you know, George Gross, it's really very powerful. And I had no idea who George Gross was, but... so that I had a bit of that, and then I came out and worked on the buildings. Then I didn't really have any sort of battle plan. I'd like to go. I like punk music. I like to go to clubs. I like to dance. I like to draw, but I couldn't sort of fashion that into sort of a. I couldn't equate that with how you sort of pay the rent. So I ended up thinking, well, you pay the rent by going on the buildings and shoveling concrete or working in a pub.
You don't get it from drawing.
Drawing's like... drawing's... It's, I mean, I can draw, so, but anybody, you know, it was very... I was very dismissive of what I... But I didn't realise that actually it's a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it sounds very sort of similar. A thing, you know, the sort of how we sort of fell into it, if you like, isn't it?
I think it's a delightful accident.
Yeah.
The thing is, I was so kind of guarded, and I didn't want to kind of lose face. I didn't want to kind of look stupid. So
yeah, well, in those days, it's like, oh, you want to be a what? You want to be a, you know, like...
So the thing is, I just kept well out, but I always found myself in the corner. Like, I'd go in the toilets when I was on the building site, and I'd be doing little comic strips in the toilets for about 20 minutes. And I'd come out and I'd be drawing about the people on site. I was with this contractor who's called Bernie, and we were called Bernie's Ball Bags. So that was me and four of the lads. So I did this little comic strip, Bernie's Ball Bags. We were always getting up to japes and messing up and stuff.
Early biz.
So anyway, you've you've been painting, and you went from, I've noticed that you start top left and you started going black and white as well.
That's right, yeah. Well, the early stuff was, because it was more like the stuff what I showed you then.
Yeah.
But on a sort of, yeah, because when I was doing stuff with Mikey, he'd do sort of a figurative, he'd do more like figurative stuff, but in a quite abstract thing. And then I'd fill in the sort of the crazy sort of stuff, what, you know, like these abstract characters, what he'd draw. Mm. And then I'd sort of fill it in with sort of that kind of, the black and white stuff. And then as I started working on my own, it was more like the stuff on there, if you see like the black and white stuff there, but it's not sort of coloured in it. But the still sort of, I call it the line, it's not line painting, but you know, mm-hmm. but it's sort of, the more confident I was getting, the less I needed to do. Do you know, because when it was really tight, I thought, I was like, I need to get into it, because I felt like I wasn't good enough, do you know what I mean, to do so.
But you got bold and you got bigger.
Yeah, it got bigger, and it's like, and that's sort of been the progression, and then building up to sort of, then I started using colour, and then the colour shapes were, started off smaller, but now when I was doing like walls outside, you know, the shapes couldn't be as big as sort of life size, if you call it, you know, so. And then putting detail into them, so it's sort of grown with me.
I was looking at you know, there's the big Bielsa down in Workley there, and it's a wonderful piece of work, and it's witty, and and it's cool, but it's just mammoth, and I can remember starting off on bits of sort of A5 pieces of paper, and then working up to A3 pieces of paper, and then buying a canvas and going on it. I'm thinking, I've got a canvas. and it's like a half an inch deep. It's half an inch deep, and there it is. So there's no messing about with this. Yeah. You know, it has to be right.
Were you nervous before?
You've got a canvas.
Like the butterflies and all that.
But I do remember getting a, I went to Netto, and they were doing like some special offer canvases in Netto.
Yeah.
And what there was, it was one of these that had like a Vincent van Gogh print on it.
And you
painted it in. It's like this Vincent van Gogh print. And I took it home, I bought some paints as well. And there was a competition, a Channel 4 competition called Self Portrait UK.
Back
in about 2003.
And
so I brought this canvas home and put it down. I thought, for myself. Started off, I thought, I'll make the background flesh and then I'll make myself. And then I had some glitter and stuff, and I was messing with toothpaste and all sorts. And I just painted this thing, and I had a really good time. And I sent off this sort of like A4 towards A3 canvas. And then, like a month later, they came back and said, "Oh, we've accepted your painting, it's going into."
I went to the
National Portrait Gallery, toured all the galleries of my painting, and I was stunned because it didn't feel like I'd kind of worked very hard.
I just felt
I'd had enormous fun with this. I was using Christmas glitter, and I was I had bits of this, that, and the other, and it just felt like something cheeky because I was bits of felt tip, and when I was at art college, I used to use biro, and people always saying, "Oh, you should get some nice pens, rotary pens. Get some Caran d'Ache. Get some Rouache." I had no idea what this stuff was, and I stepped away
on the Bics.
I was on the Bics and the felt tips, that's the fact that sort of I've made a living doing 30 years on paper bags. Mm. I like the idea of a paper bag because it's basically it's an insult to art. People say, why do you draw it on some nice paper? Yeah. Why do you have to draw on a paper bag? Well, I said, I like bags. And I did. There's something cheeky about a bag.
That's the reason.
And when I saw my first paper bag, I hopped and skipped out of the pub. I thought, I've sold somebody a paper bag.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was such a wheeze.
That's,
So the thing is, it's almost like it doesn't really matter how good you are. It's the fact that you kind of get away with something.
Yeah.
And it's like a cosmic joke.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, I'm doing that for 30 years. Yeah. And I became like, you know, official.
Yeah.
And like I had exhibitions of the paper bags, but I didn't really want that.
Right. Where have you done the exhibition?
No, I've had exhibitions in the art gallery in Leeds. I've had stuff.
And the main one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I had not of paper bags, just of paintings.
Yeah.
I had stuff down at the West Yorkshire Playhouse. I've had shows, solo shows in Danny Stroud. Keith Allen sorted me out. He's bought me my paintings. Yeah. A fella called Sean Conway, he's from Batley, and he's done a thing called Donovan, a TV. It's on Netflix, I think. It's called Donovan.
All right.
HBO.
And it's
from Batley, but he bought one of my paintings. You know, there's a fella called Hunter Smith who used to run Jumbo Records.
He bought
a painting of mine. Yeah. But I've had stuff. And then I had a show of paper bags in a barber shop in London.
Right.
On the Raising Road. This guy said, I love your work and I'd like to put it in my barbers. Mm. So we put a load of MF boards, MFI boards, whatever they are. And we hung these massive sort of frames with about 7 or 8 paper bags, which are like 14 by 11, in the barber shop. So they were kind of dangling here and there.
Right.
And I also used to do little paper bag books.
Right.
I'd get a paper bag and I'd fold it. Yeah. Get a pair of scissors and just cut it. And I have like a little flip.
Like a flip.
And then I just write a title. Today's book will be plug. So I just write the word plug, and then I think, well, I'm going to do a story about plug. or death is coming, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I had loads of these little paper bag books as well, and I'd give people clothes pegs as well as my business card, a contact peg. You know, it's
on your name.
On my peg, so there's my contact peg. You know, don't hesitate. I had a show and the Guardian did a feature on it and the Observer, and had lots of people came to John Shuttleworth and Alexei Sale and Zodiac. Arthur Smith it's just you end up doing your stuff and it starts out as a sort of a bit of self-help,
yeah,
a bit of a wheeze, and you think, well, I'm a bright guy, and I want to do something that's just going to keep me sane, a bit subversive,
yeah,
not going to cause any,
no,
not going to upset too many people, but I just need to be a bit of a bastard. I need to have somewhere to vent my spleen on this world, so I'll just keep bagging people.
Vent it, isn't it?
The thing is,
it's got to come out somewhere.
It comes out like a boil, you know, like a burst boil, and the stuff. Basically, usually all the pain and suffering you get, and all the kind of knockbacks and insults and stuff, you take them on the chin, and then you channel them into
a positive thing, and
you get it out.
And it comes back tenfold, then, doesn't it? You know, in a positive way.
Of course, it's because people recognise that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They say, "God, that little," you know, like when I do my songs, I've got a song, you know. Stars or something, and it's just this really, it feels really weedy.
Yeah.
It's just a song about, I look up to the sky and I see a star, and it makes me want to cry.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I can't see that. But a million little lights, a million trillion miles away, you know. But I've got big lads coming home from Batley with ball heads going, you do that song, Stars. I really love it, you know.
Beautiful.
So it's kind of.
But everybody loves that sincerity, and when people open their heart up, I think that's as a, you know, people like the vulnerability of it. And I think we're getting more in an age now where you are getting big guys who are opening up and
getting
in touch with the sort of, you know, that side where we've not necessarily been brought up to show.
Just being tough. I mean, it's a tough thing to sort of say, like, what's his name? Cricketer Andrew
Flintoff.
I've got bulimia. You know, it's like bloody hell.
Yeah,
you know, because he's a big sort of like Greek god.
Yeah,
you think, oh yeah, he's got it sorted.
Yeah,
and he's like, you know, Gary Speed and like a model. You know,
yeah.
He's got, and he topped himself. You know, and it's really tragic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is, so you really don't know. You know, I mean, in my experience of sort of going around sitting with somebody with a bio and a paper bag, I get such a shock from the people I sit with because I make an assumption. And I think, oh yeah, I know me. Yeah. I know my people. I know my world. Yeah. And I sit and the next thing, I'm just totally kind of, I'm in bits. I'm thinking, this person tells me the most beautiful story. But from the outside, you think there's nothing funny. I'm not going to walk with anything good from this person. But like, you just have to sit and just. Sit and listen.
Yeah.
And you learn something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I've just joined your Twitter as well. So you've got 666 followers on Twitter. I've messed up that magical number.
Well, yeah, because I don't. It's something I don't really use. I've used it a little bit with the football because it's quite a football based. Thing with the Twitter, so but I missed a trick because I didn't use it until halfway through what we've been doing.
Yeah, because you've been working with Andy, a friend of mine, Andy McKay, the Burley Banksy, who's who does paints on electric boxes around Leeds, and they're all Leeds theme stuff. But then I met him down at Oldfield Lane, and you were there with him, and you introduced yourself and said, "Oh, we're doing this big mural," and so tell us about, I mean, how did that happen? How did you, are you a football fan?
Yeah, I'm a massive Leeds fan. I've been going, for 30 odd, first game when I had 10, 1980. So I've been going for nearly 40 years, isn't it? Yeah. 40 years.
Wow.
So yeah, so a friend of mine, Aaron, who's got the pet shop, what that backs on to the gable end. So, for a while, because they're trying to, they're trying to build on the Oldfield Lane, the old Leeds City Boys pitch. So he was sort of like chairman of the committee, if you like, for trying to stop it and bring it back to the community. So
because this is a, I'll just interrupt, because Oldfield Lane is like an old football pitch. That I remember when I was a kid back in 1967, 68.
It was the Wortley Wembley.
It was. It had loads of really famous young lads who are now like really good footballers who played all field.
Everybody came through there.
It was like the mini sort of Wembley.
Yeah. Before all the academies, what we've got now, you know, because they grab them when they're like 6 years old or whatever. So, but then in those days, you played for your school and then you played for Leeds City Boys. And Leeds City Boys played against Manchester Boys and that was where Leeds City Boys used to play, so that you get all the scouts and everybody or anybody who has played there, you know, back in the day.
I played there once. Yeah. I think we played against Matthew Murray, I think.
Well, all the school fans.
Oh man, Matthew Murray were a great side. They were like rock stars. Yeah. They looked great and they were really good foot on them. And they had a really hard sort of following as well. And we were like from the grammar school up in Mortown.
Which school?
St. Thomas Aquinas.
Right.
Which was Cardinal Heenan. It was Thomas Aquinas then, but there was, we knew that Matthew Murray had a real reputation as being they were like the Spurs, of, you know, they had like Jimmy Greaves and of the day.
Aaron, he's been wanting me to sort of get involved and do like a mural on the building, but it wasn't, there was never the right time. You know, like there was Paul Madeley, when Paul Madeley was another Leeds legend, when he passed, which is a great player, but it wasn't, you know, with all due, you know, all respect, that the young kids are not going to know Paul Madeley, and it wouldn't have had that sort of the gravity, that Worthy's a sort of a massive mural like that. So when we got promotion, when it was confirmed that after 16 years, it was, because I'd not really looked at the wall. I went straight down and looked at the wall and I just thought, yeah, this is it, do you know? So I'd already done a painting of mine, which I showed you, I think, at the pitch. And it's Christ the Redeemer, the one from Rio.
Yeah, yeah.
And with all my abstract shapes. And it was called Welcome to the Favelas. So it was after a late night, should I say, with a pal of mine, Andy Dixon, another Dixon, no relation. And so we were just talking because I'd done a lot of I did like an NHS giveaway in the lockdown for, I give away a lot of my original work. But I did a lot of these prints because I got inundated with all these stories of what these, you know, amazing nurses and doctors had been doing.
Right.
So I had three pieces of work, but I thought I could not just give three people, you know, I just felt like I needed to give everybody something. So I got these prints done, and one was the Favelas. So it was in his mindset, you know, and I sent them out to everybody who sort of nominated a nurse, if you like. So
we're
over like 60, 70 pieces of work, but anyway, I'm getting off the point. So
this is good.
Welcome to the
this is part of it, you know, we're all in lockdown and we're all trying to make some sense of it. And trying to keep buoyant and trying to
bring some good out of it, you know, and that's the thing. So the Christ the Redeemer was a print sort of what was in my mind, and my friend had it on his wall, and we were just talking about Bielsa, and they were like, Bielsa's head, and it was like,
and it was like,
the very next day I run down to the wall, and I just said, Aaron, we need to get this done, we need to do it, we need to do it now, do you know, because they just got promoted, and just strike while the iron's up. So I'd been talking to Andy separately because I'd never met Andy, and you know, like he said, he does his electric boxes, and so he took a little bit of arm twisting because he was a bit afraid of it.
He's a little bit tentative.
He was like bloody no, and I said, look, mate, don't worry. I said, I've got it all set out in my head. You know, it's like I'll just follow me, and you'll be fine. You know. And to be fair, he was.
So when you do like a big piece like that, which is about sort of 20 by 30 foot, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you normally work on your own, or is there normally a team?
I always have had an assistant with me on that kind of scale because she'd just be like there.
Is that person sort of standing back maybe and kind of going, oh yeah, he's just kind of maybe just as a bit of a perspective helper or something?
I mean, it's always good to have another set of eyes, especially how I work as well. Like you know, it's all sort of from the heart, if you like, and it comes out and it's spontaneous and it's
and every line is right. That line's right, not even thinking to that.
And
I'm anxious and I have no idea what's going on with this stuff. I haven't a clue about stuff.
Well, you're
but
when in I have control,
a pen,
yeah,
basically, yeah. I'm just thinking, that's right, fine. And I've got, there's a bit of me just marvelling at my kind of confidence, but it's because that's what I'm good at.
I think absolutely, no, totally. Well, it is, you know, it's I know exactly where I'm going with it and what I'm doing, you know, so when I have people sort of helping me, because once I get this the outline, the shapes in, it's just a case of balancing the colours and making sure that because what I do is I choose a palette which you can throw any of the colours together and it'll work. But what you don't want is a massive sort of one colour on one side and one on another. So it's just, it's a case of balancing it all out,
which
is quite mathematic, but it matters.
Well, you can see, it's like being a greengrocer with a little scales.
It's balancing it out.
Of course, totally. Kind of composition or something.
Composition. Yeah. And the shapes have all got to be sort of, they don't want
to
be...
Well, you just wait for it for the bell. That's a click. The last piece is there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a jigsaw. Only it's not. It's coming from you. It's an internal jigsaw or something.
So, and the thing is, it's sort of, when I do something, I don't... Like people say, oh, can you mock this? Can you do as a mock-up? I want to know what it... I said, look, you know, no, because I don't know what it's going to look like yet. Do you know? And there's no point me doing a mock-up because it's going to not look... It's not going to be that. Do you know? You've got to trust me and you've got to like my style and just say, look, it's going to be that, and it's going to be in these colours, and I'm going to throw this in, but something might change. But
you're the master of this ship.
Yeah.
So you'll be all right, because you might hit some choppy waters. Yeah. But the thing is that it's going to be a delicious journey.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be sort of following the same journey you took last week.
Yeah,
going on the bus or horse.
Yeah.
You want to go somewhere you want to travel down to wherever, to Whitkirk again. you pass you.
Get around.
Yeah, go on the 16 buses.
Yeah, the scenic one.
And it's like, I need to have a fresh palate every time I do a performance.
Totally.
I want to be just a baby.
Yeah.
I want to be on stage and have nothing. Just standing there, like feeling like a sort of on ground zero.
Yeah.
Everything's flattened. Yeah. And there's people there, survivors. And like...
like a rabbit in a headlight.
Now what?
But you think you've got to put yourself in that situation because then you react.
Of course,
to that.
No.
Because if not, you're going to die, aren't you?
Well, the thing is, I think I'm a reactor. I think I need to have something to shake me up.
Yeah,
and
I don't really
have a, almost like maybe the confidence to think, I'm doing this, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I have to have, like, a lead has to come out of the back of the arm. And then I can think, shit, right, firefighting, sort that out. And I know what I'm doing then when there's this kind of disaster sort of situation. And I dance in a disaster.
Yeah,
I love
it.
And I've noticed you were Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah.
You were doing a piece of work.
I've got the thing.
Oh, I saw it. There's that thing over on the wall.
Yeah,
right?
there was a
group show with all these, there's a lot of big street art names there.
West Bank Gallery, where's the West Bank Gallery?
That's down in, it's Portobello Street, you know, under the subway, under the flyover. It's upstairs there where the Portobello Market is, you know, that runs along.
Well, I've got a mate, I've stayed down on Lancaster Road, just off Portobello.
Right,
And there's like a little, I think it's Portobello Radio, as you're kind of coming up towards the market, there's loads of little shops, and I think there's a little gallery there on the way up to the market.
Right.
And it's the same place.
It rings a bell.
Yeah.
But it's a man called Paul's Dizzy. Do you know Dizzy? Saunders?
No.
He's a London guy. But
no, I've got some things written. I've got the Dick Brain Collective.
That's Mikey.
Who's the Dick Brain Collective?
You know the story I told you about Mikey, who I started with?
Yeah.
So he's called Mikey Brain and I'm Nicholas Dixon, so it's like the Dick Brain Collective.
Excellent.
So that's how we kicked it off, do you know? So,
yeah. I've got somebody else written down here as well. I've got, where is it now? DJ Eats Everything.
Oh, Eats Everything, yeah.
DJ Eats Everything. Who's DJ Eats Everything?
Eats Everything. Oh, he's excuse the pun, he's a massive DJ. he's a house DJ from Bristol, who's got a good story as well. I mean, he were going for years, and he was called Dan Pierce. And I think he used to be on work on building sites and stuff. And he was just going to pack it in, and then he changed his name to like Eats Everything, and just like sort of like that, and he released the track, and then just everybody went crazy for him, and he's got, you know, residencies on Radio 1, but he's got like 500,000 followers on Facebook and stuff. So I did the he started a label called Edible. So I did the first 10 releases.
It's all like DJ house stuff then, isn't it?
Yeah, all house music, yeah. So these are them here, but there's 10 of them, so I haven't really got them put on the floor actually, but they're all separate, these are all separate releases. So if you see, I'll get you a picture of the full thing. So it started off, that was the first release, so it was...
We're just looking at the first canvas here, people. It's a canvas with some black and white images on it.
So it was black, white, grey, and then the next release I added a... No, sorry, it's that one. So then I added a dark grey to that one, and then I added a red to the next one, and then a blue. So every release, I added a colour.
So we've got canvases, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 10 canvases, so, and they're gradually building up colour. So just imagine that, folks.
So there was 10 in total,
yeah.
Which I'll show you the, just might take me a second to get this. So basically it was a big jigsaw, and the whole 10 made one big piece.
All right, well listen, well I'll take us some pictures of these, I think, and then we'll show them when we have the...
Yeah.
When the podcast comes out, so there'll be people have an idea what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's just painting. nothing to see.
That's it. So. But it's funny you should say that, because I've not done anything with him for sort of about 3 years, and he's just got a new manager. It's Pete Tong's manager, Terry Ferguson. So they're just thinking of stuff to sort of stay current and visual in this time where DJs are not, you know, they're not playing out, they're not going to be playing for a while. Yeah. And he's in the studio, but we're doing some face masks, because these are here to stay. A few people have asked me to do them, and I'm like, no, do you know what? I don't even want to be associated with, you know, these horrible things, but...
Matt, Johnny in the band, him and Mark we've been talking about face masks.
Yeah,
because we do merch stuff, and our last bit of merch is some beer, and we have scarves, and so I don't know.
Yeah, so I've knocked them back, you know, because I thought, you know, I can't be arsed with that, you know. So, but the thing is, these masks are going to be here for the next year, So they got in touch with me anyway, and they said, do you fancy doing, to celebrate the 10 releases and Eats Everything, Nicholas Dixon and Savile Row, face masks. So these guys who they know, I think they've because the work's gone down, you know, obviously with everything, with the COVID. So they've got these Savile Row tailors who are going to make these masks. So it's going to be, you know, part of that. It's not going to be the whole thing, but they're going to be sort of on the shelves, folks, in the next few weeks. So it's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Four for
a
quid.
So, yeah. You know, like the Savile Row mask thing. It's a bit of a, you know, Dan's got a good sense of humour as much as I have, so it's quite it is a piss take, I suppose, but it's just a bit of fun. Trying to have a bit of fun with a pretty fucking serious and not a great time, is it, for everybody. So
what else is getting you through this strange period we're having?
Just take you back to that. That's the 10 together. So they're the ones I showed you on the thing. So, but it strangely works, do you know, like it, because it's just added the colour to that thing. So it's
top left.
Top left, you got it.
So tell us, Nicholas, what else is getting you through? And what is getting you through?
Through lockdown, bloody hell, I'm a local, I'm never drunk as much, and that's saying something, which it's not really. Some days it's getting you through, sometimes it's not. It's just trying to balance that. I think everybody's drinking intake's gone, you know, through the roof with the whole lockdown situation. So
smoking as well. I heard yesterday, I think Lambert and Butler and everybody else, like the triple smoke again. Fags are back in the world.
Which is not a good thing. Do you know? It's like bloody hell. Mm. That does. I lost my mother to smoking, and that's lung cancer. It's that's not good news at all. But think, well, where you saw me, Mick, in Farsley, a little village where we live, which has been, it's been quite a, it's had quite a nice community sort of feel to it, and because she's not going anywhere else, and, you know, that all the businesses are trying to support, well, you know, everyone's trying to support all the local businesses, and there's a few nice restaurants up there, like the Mill Kitchen, and, you know, a couple of nice little pubs, and they've done some nice sort of community things, which I've been involved with, sort of the NHS themed again, and you know, did some artwork in sort of the shop windows, but vinyled them, do you know? So, you know, anything which had, you know, just space, if you like, just filling it with sort of some positive vibes, if you like, do you know? Yeah. So, so Farsley's been, it's been great through lockdown. I mean, I've been at my house there 17 years. I've lived away, I've lived in Ibiza and France and moved away and come back. I've thought about, you know, doing a London move, but, you know, that's not for me. I'm not 20 year old anymore, do you know? So I've got a lot of friends who live down there, but and then do I want to move away? But, you know, everything's on hold at the moment, isn't it? You can't really have any sort of plans that's concerned.
I mean, we've got a few gigs lined up in the end of the month. We're supposed to be playing at Seven Arts in Leeds, and we're supposed to be playing in Bath towards the end of the month.
Sat down and stuff, do you know?
Socially distanced, yeah. I don't know. And we've got a gig in Macclesfield at a place called Guru Mash.
Guru Mash?
Guru Mash in Macclesfield, a little pub. And but it's been so long. I mean, I've not picked a microphone up in anger in, like, since March.
Yeah, and,
Since then, I've been finding other outlets. I've been sewing buttons.
Right.
And what else? And doing these podcasts.
Yeah. Well, it's great you're doing this. It's, you know, I really appreciate having this time with you today. It's been interesting.
Well, it's just nice to meet a fellow Leeds man and somebody. I did a painting show about 3 years ago called Magic People, and it was just people that I'd seen on the street around Leeds for years, and I'd heard about them, and I was too shy to approach them, but they, and I could tell that they had something about them. They had a kind of a charge.
An aura.
So I rang these people up and said, "Will you come round to my house? Because I'd like to paint you." And then get to know them through paint and art. And so I invited them, I put the CD player on and put some, whatever, Joseph Locke on or some fucking some nonsense. And they'd sit there for an hour or two, and I painted Hunter Smith and lots of strange Leeds people that I was so happy to have in the world. I'm just thinking, they're a similar breed. And we're just kind of skittles that are just kind of rocking all the time. But we're not very stable.
No.
But, you know, we have a little kind of, there's a bit of glamour there. Yeah, a bit of buoyancy there, yeah. So, and it's just nice to meet another skittle. So, right, well, before we finish, Nicholas, have you got a track that you'd, or an album that is sort of playing in your head, or that you've listened to recently, that just lights you up and makes you, gives you a buzz?
One that really jumps out, which is Bill Withers, I Can't Write Left-Handed. It's, do you know about the Vietnam things? It's a playlist. Oh man, do you want to listen to it?
You can play it, He's got his DJ concert.
I've not got the, it'll just have to be on my phone, unfortunately.
Well, I'll tell you what, no, we'll get we'll people to listen to it. Yeah, I mean, the title's enough for me, I'm intrigued. Yeah.
I can't write left-handed. And basically, it's about a guy, he's a Vietnam veteran, I think he's had his arm blown off or whatever. But basically, it's just Bill Withers humming there's a guitar. It's so stripped back, it's like, but it's, you know, if you come out of that without a tear in your eye, you'll be, you know, there'll be something wrong with you. But yeah, just a very emotional track, and I don't know why there were a time I was playing it quite a lot in the middle of lockdown. Do you know one that you just keep going back to?
Yeah.
And I think I must have seen it somewhere or heard it or whatever, and it was just, and it's just one that stuck with me through lockdown. So I'd say that's been.
Thank you very much. Right, well, that was Nicholas Dixon.
Thanks very much, Nicholas, for joining us today. Nicholas is busy with various projects, designing record sleeves, murals for nightclubs and shopping centres, designing bespoke trainers and face masks for Savile Row, and painting canvases. Details can be found on his website, www.nicholasdixon.co.uk. He's on Twitter at Nicholas Dixon Art, on Instagram at Nicholas Dixon, and on Facebook as well. You can listen to this again and download the podcast on iTunes, Mick Artistic's Ego Podcast. Further links can be found on our website, www.mickartistic.com. And if you like what you hear, give us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Tell your mates, tell your family. We're going to be taking a break for a little while. Me and the band are gigging again, which is wonderful. We've got a big tour starting in October, the A Tour, and details are on our website. We'll be back soon with a second series full of interesting and unusual guests. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I've had a ball, and I hope you have too. I want to thank Johnny, Bella and Seb for all their hard work. Take care, and we'll chat soon.